Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Monday. Thanks for being with us. What a weekend. What a weekend it was. Working on some guest stuff here. Michael Fabiano is going to be with us coming up at about 10:20 from the NFL Network. Always good to catch up with the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano. We'll hear from Robert Kimdichie, the Cardinals' first-round pick in the show today. Eric was out there. Paula Bovin will join us. News and notes around the Cardinals and their draft. And what do we do here with Shelby Miller? I saw where Dansby Swanson has already been promoted. I'm sorry that this is going to turn into a regular occurrence as to how does this shortstop they gave up versus the pitcher they brought here. And he was actually pretty good for a few innings yesterday, but then it all fell apart. So we have that to get to. But obviously, and then there's a lot of basketball. I watched most of the playoffs over the weekend. I even found myself watching some of Toronto last night. That tells you how diehard I am, Toronto and Indiana. But it was a good weekend all the way around. The draft is now finished. And we could go through pick by pick and all that stuff. The bottom line is, on all this, it is pertains to the Cardinals. The takeaway is their defense has really been improved and bolstered. Now, that's simple and easy to figure out here. Is Kimdichie a risk? I think every kid's a risk at this day and age, guys. I mean, seriously. If we didn't see Tunsil's video of him doing his thing with a gas mask on, who would have known, right? Some guys get it figured out, some guys don't. And it was a position of need. But I do believe now, as many of you have pointed out to me as the weekend progressed, why haven't they taken a quarterback yet? Brad, they haven't taken a quarterback yet. You know, the whole quarterback thing, as it progresses, and now they have another quarterback, it's going to change. Every year, I think every year and every other, maybe even every other year, but you can't go 3 or 4 years without taking somebody. The quarterback stuff is always going to be hanging over their head and who the next one is going to be for Carson Palmer. Fans want to know that. That's all I've gotten this morning and actually by yesterday afternoon. What are they going to do at quarterback in the future? So, and it's that's just how it works out. Eric, you were out there over the weekend. I think we had a good weekend. We had a really good weekend because the local stuff, we just killed it. I mean, Jared was with DJ Foster all day Saturday. He's the only guy at DJ Foster's house all day. He was supposed to be like a third-round pick. Were you surprised by that one?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't surprised that he wasn't a third-round pick, but I was. If you would have told me on Wednesday night that DJ Foster would go undrafted and Scooby Wright would be the, fourth or fifth to last selection of the entire draft, I probably would have called you crazy.
Mm. Tom Lugenbill is going to be with us tomorrow. He just sent me a.
Oh, great.
So we'll talk about Kimdichie with him. Westerman going to Cincinnati.
Another Sun Devil in Cincinnati.
Yeah, there's something there. Our guy Lucian, who we had on, goes to... So Todd Graham was with us last week, and he mentioned Bill Belichick had called him. Actually, I don't know if he mentioned that there or if it was the speaking thing he and I were at on Tuesday night.
Yeah, those two have a pretty long-standing friendship.
And Burko goes to the Chargers. So... And there were some other guys, too. I think Cherry went to the 49ers. You know, over on Rich Rod's end of things, you talked to Scooby Wright on Saturday. He was in fine form, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the video, but after the selection, he ran out and jumped in his swimming pool fully clothed.
Of course.
Which sounds like something Scooby Wright would do. And when I did talk to him on the phone, he sounded like the party was continuing over at the Wright house. But it's good. It's good. It's good for him.
Hey, he's returned the call, right?
He's going to Cleveland, and he's going to have an opportunity to make the team. And that's all you can really ask for.
Yeah.
And I guess, apparently, the Cardinals were going to get him if he was not selected in the draft. He was all set to sign with the Cardinals as an undrafted free agent, but mm-hmm. that didn't happen. So he's off to Cleveland. Good luck
with
that.
Will Parks was drafted, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in-state, we like to see players, lots of players from the in-state schools. And then we also like to look at the guys that played high school football here, and because we do all platforms. We don't just do we just don't do the NFL stuff. We do everybody. And the high school kids that have gone on to college and that were drafted, and weren't that many this year, But nonetheless, you know, it was fine. I was more interested in seeing how the Kimdiche fallout would be, because we have this thing in society where we like to just immediately just hammer away on what someone's done and that's it. And I'm like, no, I think this is a good pick. I think this is a really good pick. And yeah, he's made some mistakes, and we have all made mistakes when we're 20, 21, 22. The franchise here, it's not like Tunsil going to Miami. And this is, it's a completely different deal, I think, when you peel back the onion on his story. You're going to come here and you're going to have a strong veteran locker room and a team that went all the way to the NFC Championship game last year, a team that's right in the heart of trying to get big things done and trying to go to the Super Bowl. Now, because he and Chandler Jones have both had some issues involving marijuana, I don't know. When I was 20, 21, 22, was marijuana around? Sure it was. 10 years from now, may marijuana be legal across the country? It sure might be. But there's a lot of people out there that say, ooh, red flag. We're not going to go that way. So there's that over the weekend. Michael Fabiano here in about 6 minutes. On the Diamondbacks end of things, so Shelby Miller, I don't know what to do with him now. He pitched pretty well a couple innings yesterday, but he's 0-3. He didn't make it out of the fourth inning. So whenever Shelby Miller starts, it ends up being this load on the bullpen. And they get swept by the Rockies. And I know the Rockies are hitting the cover off the ball. Arenado hit out his 11th yesterday. But it's the first time the Diamondbacks have been swept at home since 2004. But yet, as bad as things are, so this is not a small sample now. They're 27 games into the season. They're 5-12 at home. 5-12. They have a better road record, 7-3 away from home. But they're only a game and a half out of first place. Does it mean the National League West is just not good? Does it mean that teams are beating up on one another? What's very clear to me is the Cubs and the Nats are head and shoulders above teams in the National League West, from my view. Having watched the Cubs play in Arrieta, I don't know if Arrieta is going to lose. What was the quote that I saw? I think Peter had in his column today about Arrieta, and it was Ryan Braun. The quote, something I'm paraphrasing here, but something like, it's just a guy you just don't want to face at any time, at any place, or something like that. It was very strong. But the Diamondbacks are at 12-15. With all the preseason buildup and the preseason hype, and Greinke gets a no decision on Saturday night. He pitched pretty well, but it's still not Greinke-esque. It's not like he's blowing away the competition. Really like what this Brandon Drury kid's all about. 4 home runs in 5 days. I remember during spring training, the Diamondbacks were saying, better keep an eye on Drury and see what he can do. So they get swept out by Colorado, and now they go on the road. They go play on the road against the Fish down in Miami, and that means Giancarlo Stanton. We'll talk about him tomorrow because he sits some balls a long, 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 long ways.
It's a long trip for the Diamondbacks. They're gone for like 10 days or something. So,
and they already had one long one.
They did.
They go to Miami. They go to Atlanta. Atlanta can't hit. And then they go to Coors Field after getting swept down here.
And just for some perspective, I know it's been a disappointing first month, but the Diamondbacks won 5 games last year at this time. So there is improvement. I know. Different year, different situation, different payroll.
I got it. I'm not down on them. I'm going to stick to my 88 wins. People are thinking I'm nuts on this.
It's been a disappointing month, though.
No, sure.
It has been. I mean, the hype, the preseason expectations, spring training, the best record in the Cactus League, finger quotes, that means nothing. Yeah, yeah, I get it. But there was a lot of hype around this team.
I the thing that's disappointing to me is how bad they are at home. They've already played 17 home games in the first month of the season, and they're 5-12. That's just not getting it done. And some of those games on this last homestand, what was it, the Friday night game was 8-0 before you knew it? And so they were never in that game. There's been quite a few of those games so far this season.
But the good news is the NL West right now isn't that great. I think the Giants and Dodgers are both tied for first at 500. So,
a thing I've got here over the weekend, I wrote down Luke Walton. And I bring him up because former U of A Wildcat, always liked Luke Walton. One of the first stories I told when I went over to TV at Channel 3, because Bill and I used to do games way back in the day. Bill's I was one of Bill Walton's first play-by-play guys doing the University of San Diego Torero basketball. And Charlie Jones, the late legendary, legendary broadcaster Charlie Jones, somebody will correct me on this one, called me in San Diego and he said, I heard you're doing the play-by-play for University of San Diego, USD. You need to get Bill Walton as your color analyst. All right. He said, I can arrange that. I've been working with Bill because Bill had a speech impediment. And Charlie arranges it, and he sends me a note. Bill wants to meet you over at his house. His house is over by the San Diego Zoo. He's been there forever, by Balboa Park. So I drive over. It's a nice house on the outside. This person lets me in, and I notice as I walk in that the beams on the ceiling, the phone is on the beams of the ceiling. And the phone book that's back in the day is up there, too. It's like, because he's 6'11". I walk out into his backyard, and there's this big old teepee in the backyard. Big old teepee. And there's Bill over in the jacuzzi over to the side. I walk over to him and he's butt naked. And he says, hop on in. So I just rolled my pant legs up. And we sat there and visited. And this is when the boys were very, very young, obviously. And we did some University of San Diego basketball games together. They were adventures. I'm writing about that a little bit in the book. And so to see Luke now, all grown up, when I went over to television, Channel 3, I called Bill and I said, hey, I want to do a story on you. He said, come on down to Tucson. He let me mic him up. And he and Luke and I did a sit down after the game was over. Bill is in the student section just having a great old time. It was good stuff. It was really fun stuff. So now I see Luke all these years later as a popular L.A. Laker. Man, the Suns are just, man, they're in a bad spot. Like Luke going to the Lakers. Magic Johnson over the weekend saying he wants to mentor D'Angelo Russell. That's not good. And you look at all the teams in the Western Conference of the NBA and how they're all, I think Utah's roster is getting pretty good. I think Minnesota's roster is getting pretty good. And these are teams that did not make the playoffs. I think New Orleans has Anthony Davis. That's a pretty good situation. The Lakers have some assets, but I don't know how quickly they could get it turned around. So there's four teams right there. And then you have the Suns over here. Plus all the teams that are already in the playoffs doing their thing. So Luke Walton gets hired by the Lakers. And that was the big news in the NBA over the weekend. And getting some playoff stuff here a little bit later. Michael Fabiano is next from the NFL Network. On the other side, the fantasy football impact around the NFL draft. That's next. I'm Brad Smat. And now with the draft behind us, we can focus squarely on fantasy football. Of course we can. That's what it's all about. Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer with the NFL Network with us. And as soon as Ezekiel Elliott was selected, I'm thinking, well, Michael's got to be jumping up and down and cheering. Put it all aside, was he the best rookie? Because you're not big on rookies in fantasy, but is he the top rookie in your mind that was a winner from the weekend?
I don't see how it can be anybody else. Elliott, the class of the running back draft, the guy who can come in and be a three-down back at the next level, joins a team with arguably one of the best offensive lines in terms of run blocking in the entire league, a team that needed a running back. I know they signed Alfred Morris, but Alfred Morris has been in decline for just about the last two or three years, and you're looking at a potential top 10 fantasy pick. And I know that I'm a Cowboys fan, and people may say, well, that's a little bit of a homer statement, but it's not. The running back position is thin, and when you talk about a guy who can come in and can do everything as a running back, run it, catch the ball out of the backfield, pass block, it's going to be hard for the Cowboys to take him off of that football field. He's going to get a lot of touches, and I would pick him over the likes of, for example, Devonta Freeman at this point. So I'm projecting him as a late first-round pick. At worst, maybe one of the first three picks in the second round. And there's some risk there when you draft a rookie that high. There is some risk there. But, boy, the reward could be unreal for fantasy fans.
Okay, so and let's flip this around on the other side. Derrick Henry, that doesn't seem like a good destination for him.
No, when the Titans picked him in the second round, I almost gasped. I was like, what? I mean, we were thrilled that DeMarco Murray was in Tennessee, where he'd be allowed to be a featured back for the first time since he left the Dallas Cowboys. And even though Mike Mularkey is saying the right things, and he's basically quoted as saying, hey, I told DeMarco, he's still our guy, do you draft the reigning Heisman Trophy winning running back in the second round and not use him as a rookie? I mean, I don't know. To me, I'd be shocked. So Murray's value took a hit. And to be quite honest with you, in seasonal leagues, Derrick Henry's value took a hit. If he ended up in Miami, chance to start. If he ended up in Chicago, chance to start. Mm-hmm. In Tennessee, he's got no chance to start as far as I'm concerned, although I was on path to the draft yesterday, and Charlie Casserly said that he expects Derrick Henry to end up being the starter for Tennessee. So who do I know? What do I know? But it would appear that while Henry is still draftable in seasonal leagues, and he could be a very good handcuff for DeMarco Murray, his prospects, at least for his rookie season, aren't that great.
Michael Fabiano with us from the NFL Network, the Hall of Famer. It's always great to have Michael on board. Now that the draft is through, and given that you're not big on rookies coming in and making an immediate impact, Ezekiel Elliott aside, how many rookies do you project out, Michael, in the first, let's say, three rounds of your drafts now moving forward? Now that we know where free agency is, draft has gone, how many mm-hmm. rookies in the first three rounds of mocks are you seeing?
One. Elliott. That's it. I mean, Corey Coleman's not going to go until the later rounds. Derrick Henry's not going to go until the middle to late rounds. Kenneth Dixon's not going to go until the middle to late rounds, more citing towards the later rounds there. I see one. And with rookies, I think, as a whole, rookies don't make a huge impact if you put all the positions together. There are some guys that have made an impact that I have liked because of the opportunities, like Corey Coleman. Very, very dynamic playmaker who's in a great spot with Cleveland, who doesn't have a number one wide receiver because Josh Gordon's still suspended. Josh Doctson, I think, could be the best fantasy receiver in this entire class, but it won't be in 2016 because the Redskins have a lot of mouths to feed in the offense. Mm-hmm. DeSean Jackson, I believe, has avoidable final year of his contract, and Garcon is also a free agent at the end of the year, so Doctson could end up being a one or a two next year on the Redskins. Laquon Treadwell ended up in a great spot in Minnesota. They lack a true number one wide receiver, unless you consider that to be Stephon Diggs, but at worst case, he's a two. But there isn't that one player outside of Ezekiel Elliott where you're excited about him from a fantasy perspective. I would contend that from a fantasy standpoint, this draft stunk because outside of Elliott and maybe three or four wide receivers, out of all the players who were drafted, all that happened in this draft was confusion. Confusion in Chicago's backfield. Confusion in Tennessee's backfield. There is going to be a couple of veterans who actually were winners in this, like Latavius Murray, Jay Ajayi, because teams didn't draft running backs who are going to come in and compete with them for early down work. C.J. Anderson's another one. Everyone loves C.J. Anderson coming back to the Denver Broncos. Then they re-sign Ronnie Hillman, and they draft Devontae Booker. Confusion. I would still say Anderson's the guy, but now there's another back who could snake some carries away from him. So it was a fun draft in real football terms, especially for myself as a Cowboys fan. And a lot of Jaguars fans out there are thrilled, a lot of Browns, Titans fans. Maybe they have some optimistic thoughts for the future. But from a fantasy standpoint, at least for people in seasonal leagues, which is what most people play in, I mean, there wasn't a lot to like.
Well, you got a kicker in Tampa Bay. Come on, Michael. What are you talking about?
Second round, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, these Florida State kickers, right? Sebastian Janikowski was actually a first-round pick as a rookie, if you remember back to then. So, and to be honest with you, if Aguayo ends up being the guy in Tampa Bay, which there's no chance he's not going to be the guy in Tampa Bay,
right?
He could end up outscoring a lot of the other rookies, you know, like just because he's a kicker. So,
before I let you go, because I know you're on the set and time's short, quarterbacks of the ones that went high, those three, which one do you think is going to be the first one to come up on fantasy radars?
Maybe Paxton Lynch, because I think he's got a legitimate shot to start right out of the gate. I'm not, listen, I hope these guys succeed. I'm not a big fan of Jared Goff from a fantasy standpoint. He's in a run-based offense, and he can't run with the football. If you look, and I wrote a column about this on NFL.com, if you look at the rookie quarterbacks in the last 10 years who have been very successful, they all ran with the ball. Cam Newton, Robert Griffin III, Vince Young, Andrew Luck scored 5 rushing touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Goff's not going to do that. He rushed for negative 114 yards in college. and they don't throw the ball in Los Angeles. So I'm not a big fan of him right out of the gate. Carson Wentz is going to be sitting. Maybe he'll start at some point in the season, but Sam Bradford's there, even though he's pouting at this point. And if Bradford isn't there for some reason or another, I don't know how they would get out of that contract. They can't trade him. It would be Chase Daniel.
Right.
Now, Lynch is interesting because he's only got Mark Sanchez to compete with, and I'm not a big fan of Mark Sanchez. Mark Sanchez has proven that he makes too many mistakes. Even though he got the Jets to a couple of AFC championship games, that was a lot about the defense and running the football, if you remember. So Lynch would be the most intriguing to me. He also was pretty prolific in terms of scoring rushing touchdowns at Memphis. But I'm not super, super high on any of those three quarterbacks. And after that, you're looking at dynasty league picks, and that's about it.
Right, right. Well, interesting times. We'll have a lot to talk about in the offseason. Appreciate your time as always, Michael. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Michael Fabiano right there from the NFL Network. Okay, the draft's done from the fantasy standpoint. We do a lot of that. Appreciate his time. Always good to catch up with the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central Sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sussmat.
Always good to catch up with the professor, Paula Bovin. It's not John Clayton, the professor. It's Paula. So. News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist, more importantly, my friend. What was your big takeaway from NFL draft weekend for the Cardinals? Was it Kim Dichie? Was it something else? Was it a mixture? What's your view?
It was a couple things. It was sort of the, you know, it's been written quite a bit, but the risk factor the Cardinals went with Kim Dichie. I think he's a really interesting story. I think he's going to turn out to be a great draft pick. So that was one of them. And also their just willingness to go with the small colleges, the, you know, the guys that were getting graded Fs by a lot of analysts because they're not that known or didn't go to traditional powerhouse schools. I mean, this is just a group that is so confident in what they do, you know, and obviously if you're in that position, you have to be, but they could care less what anybody else thinks. So other than maybe a kicker being drafted as higher, as high as he was, I think the Cardinals' willingness to, you know, just do what they want, I thought was really intriguing.
So they bring a quarterback in, though, as a free agent, and you look at Jake Coker, and it's like, oh, okay, what do we really have here? A guy that played well in college, obviously, a national championship with Alabama, and then before that, Florida State. But beyond that, what are we to make out of this?
You know, I'm really intrigued by this, Brad, and part of it, I've been on the phone this morning because I was been contemplating writing a column about it. I talked to someone who played in the NFL who told me he pretty much thinks Matt Barkley is done here. And part of the reason is if you bring a free agent in or free agents, guys with the contracts sometimes are, you know, they don't keep him around. And so I just think Barkley's days may be numbered here. Coker, you know, there's some questions about him. The reality is I think he only played 1 year of college football as a starter. So I think, you know, I think there's still growth there. And I know a lot of people were really high on him and that they put him higher than a lot of the guys that were drafted. So I'm kind of intrigued by this. Now, we know there hasn't always been success with this group bringing in a big quarterback. You know, I can't help but remember Logan Thomas. But I'm curious to see what happens with Jake Coker.
Well, okay, I see your point. But is he the replacement for Carson Palmer? And to that end, I would say no. But I could be dead flat wrong. Did they address the quarterback in the draft this year? No, they didn't. So, and they passed on some guys. And we're going to have this conversation, you know it, I know it, all the way until Carson wins a playoff game. We're going to have this conversation about what's going to happen at quarterback after he's done. I don't know if Jay Coker's the guy, but at least they brought somebody in. But it makes sense what you're saying about Matt Barkley.
Yeah, you know, I think that, I mean, my feeling was if you didn't have a couple of those top picks and weren't, you know, willing to trade everything to get them, a lot of people were saying that maybe these other guys that went in the third and fourth round weren't worth the risk of losing that big of a pick, and that some of the guys in free agency were just as talented. So, you know, the more I thought about it, going the undrafted free agent route with the quarterback, if you didn't have a top pick, was probably the way to go. And yeah, is he the replacement? Most likely not, but at least they're giving some guy work. They get to see a guy who has not reached his potential yet, it sounds like, especially if he's only started 1 year in college, and maybe there's more there. I understand the risk. Do they need to keep looking at this issue? Absolutely, because, you know, how much longer does Carson have? It could be a couple games. It could be 3 years. We don't know. But that has to be a continuing thought process with them.
I've been impressed with their offseason. I really have. I know there's been some that have said, well, Chandler Jones had some off-the-field stuff. Kim Dichie had off-the-field stuff. Here's the bottom line. Most every 19, 20, 21-year-old, 22-year-old is going to have something off-the-field stuff. Something. Sure. Doesn't mean it's anything over the top. It could be hopping a fence at midnight to go jump in a swimming pool and being caught. I don't know. But I look at it and say, I'm about winning football games. I'm not all about character 100%. I've got to have a few rough edges in a 53-man roster, and even beyond that, I have to have a few guys that have had some bumps and have had some bruises. It doesn't mean I seek them out intentionally. It just means that when they come across my plate, I'm not going to run away and hide. If I have a group full of choir boys, I'm going to get my butt beat every time, Paula.
Well, and I mean, to me, Brad, in this day and age with this, you know, hyper scrutiny of everything, there are very few guys you're going to find that didn't do stuff. Now, there are some great people available in the draft who didn't. But these days, when it comes to issues of, frankly, weed, which, you know, people can argue for or against legalizing and everything else, it is very much a part of our culture now. And if you're going to, you know, take one situation with someone had weed in his room and, you know, I know there were more things with Kim Dichie, but that was sort of the big deal. You're not going to find many players. I mean, the reality is that's part of our culture now. But I think the Cardinals have done a really good job of sort of targeting these situations and taking them each individually, because there's one thing to say somebody has a problem, has an issue, is going to be a challenge. And it's another thing to say somebody made a mistake. And sure. I think those are two very, very different things. I think the Cardinals have done a nice job sort of analyzing it, and we've talked often about that culture in the Cardinals locker room. It's very strong, great leadership. So I'm very comfortable with what the Cardinals have done. And, you know, Tyrann Mathieu, we can talk about it endlessly, but is sort of the proving point of how it shouldn't define a guy for the rest of his life. And they've done a really nice job, I think, of looking into these things.
Sure. And there's always going to be that side of it that, see, look, they missed on that guy. See, look. And I would say, you know what? When Jonathan Dwyer did what he did, they got his butt out of here. Darrell Washington, we haven't seen and heard from him. So I think they've done a good job in a very tough situation within their workforce. This is their workforce. They're trying to hire 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds to come in and pay them lots of money to make an immediate impact on a shelf life of a 2.5 to 3 year career. None of us can really relate to that. We don't have 2 and 3 year careers. And we weren't in an age when we were at that age of social media and cameras everywhere and people not having any regard for what was private or not. A Tunsil situation wouldn't have happened 25 years ago when you and I were in that age bracket. No offense to your age or my age, but, you know.
No, sure. And I'm glad, Brad, it wasn't part of my youth, because, my sure. goodness, I mean, I was a good kid, but I'd hate everything analyzed and scrutinized, and I made stupid mistakes like we all have. And, you know, now they're captured on video, and when you're as high profile as these guys, everything is scrutinized. And it's not easy, you know. Ask Matt Leinart in a party he had in a jacuzzi, right?
Sure,
I mean, you know,
sure.
People are going to take pictures when you don't think they're going to be taking pictures. So,
well, and it doesn't mean that they're not going to miss on somebody.
Sure.
See, my thing is, you look at the body of work that Steve Keim has done. I'm just going to talk about Steve here a minute because I get it. It all goes together. But Bruce has to coach them up. Steve is the one that has to select the players. If he feels like he needs some outside eyes to have on it, and if he wants to bring Michael Bidwell in to size somebody up, fine. I think that's smart on his part. But this is all on Steve. I have high regard for his acumen of drafting, but he's going to miss on some guys. It's just the business, and there's going to be that phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning. The odds are it's going to happen. You just don't want it to happen very often. And so I'm big on taking a guy like Kimdichie if you go through it, if you vet him out. And you know what? If he screws up, then shame on him for blowing this thing up. I'm not going to point the finger at the organization and say, man, did they screw this one up?
No, I completely agree. And at some point, you have to defer to someone like Keim because of the track record. Like you said, there have been some misses, but there have been some really good hits on people other teams passed on. And at this point, I'm willing to just hand it to them and sort of follow their course. And, you know, the other part of the story is having Michael Bidwell as your team president. And he's on a lot of committees, ones in the NFL that deal with addressing domestic abuse issues and things like that. He was a longtime, you know, a prosecutor. So he's a pretty good judge of talent, I think, when he's eyeing guys and sizing them up and things like that. So I'm very comfortable with what the Cardinals have done. And, some teams won't take the risk. I think sometimes you're going to lose out on a lot of players if you don't, especially the ones who maybe their mistakes are isolated or few and far between.
Because look at it from this standpoint. If Carson and Larry aren't here a year from now, let's just say that, or let's just say Larry's the one that's not here a year from now. And the shelf life of running backs is short. You know, we thought mm-hmm. Andre Ellington 3 years ago, 2 years ago, was going to be all this and all that. Now I'm going to be surprised if he makes it through a season healthy. So if you have a really good defense, and they've stocked it up on that side. If you look at the age now on this franchise, it's pretty well balanced, but there's some teeth that are longer on the offensive side of the football. And when they go through that change, not if, when they go through that change and these guys retire, move on, whatever, and you've got a defense that's loaded with young guys that are coming into their own, maybe you are like the Rams, for a good example, I think, where we've got a really good defense. We're going to figure our offense out eventually. And I think that Steve set them up. This isn't about 16. They're going to win in 16. This is about 17, 18, 19, what they've done here on their defensive side of the football. I think it's very smart.
It's a great point, Brad, and you're right. I mean, there are obviously the veterans on defense, but they've been adding some nice young guys in the secondary. That defensive line is evolving, you know, the linebackers. So you're right. And we've seen teams endure in the NFL and maybe not win every game. But when you have a defense like they're building, at mm-hmm. least you have a chance going into the game. At least you're going to be competitive. And that's what you need, as you mentioned, when you're sort of working out the offensive kinks. And, you know, they don't have those offensive kinks for the most part right now. They may down the road when they lose Carson Palmer. But hopefully as they sort of figure that out, it won't be too big.
All right. We're a month into the baseball season here. I know you've been looking at the draft. They're 27 games in. They're a game and a half out of first place. They're not good at home. Miller doesn't have a win. Greinke's been he's been okay for comparative to what we were hoping for. What do you make out of this team so far?
The pitching has surprised me. I mean, this is no great statement. Are they really only a game and a half back still?
That's it.
That's amazing, and that says something about their division right now too. I mean, they're keeping themselves in the game other ways with offense and with their play on the road, but it's a little concerning. At some point, you feel like some of these guys that are struggling, and it's not even the Greinke factor as much as it's some of the other guys. You know, you need a deeper starting lineup or a group of starters to succeed in Major League Baseball. So. Again, it's not panic time. I know. I think I said that a week ago, and maybe 2 weeks ago too. But something has to start evolving with the starters, and this team has to feel more confident because they're doing a lot of other things right. Maybe not playing great defense, and their outfield isn't one of them. But they're doing a lot of other things right, particularly offensively. So again, I don't think it's panic time, but you sure want to see some better. Pitching from some of those starters.
Next time they're home, they have 4 with the Giants and 3 with the Yankees. That's going to be fun. And
that is going to be fun. Absolutely.
See you later. Stay well.
All right, Brad.
It's Paula Bovin via Skype, my friend, AZ Central Sports columnist. We have some we have some stuff on the other side. So the Diamondbacks, it's a smart play by sports to try to get people to bring their dogs to the ballpark. It is, because you have to always find new ways. If I just say, hey, you need to come to the park and see the team play, you're not going to draw as many people. But if you can bring your dog, of course. So the Diamondbacks worked on that yesterday, and I've got some thoughts on that front. The NFL had something around their first round picks that I think as coaches and parents and people that are in this day and age of specialization, which drives me absolutely crazy, you need to know some numbers on the other side. We'll get to that. Jared Cohen spent the day with DJ Foster. No one else was with DJ Foster all day on Saturday except Jared Cohen from right here. It's terrific stuff. We'll bring that little piece of video to you next. Probably the biggest local story over the weekend outside of the Cardinals with their draft picks and the Diamondbacks scuffling was NFL draft players here in the Valley. DJ Foster at Arizona State. We knew DJ Foster all the way back at Saguaro High School. We did stories on him when we first started this company. And he's come in studio several times, has had his ups and has had his downs, but was thought to be an NFL draft player. Jared Cohen talked to DJ, and DJ said, yeah, come over to my house on draft day. And Jared Cohen was given access and sat in with the Foster family for the whole day on Saturday, a day that DJ would go undrafted. How did it work out? Here's Jared's story. Good stuff there from Jared Cohen, working hard. He was at the draft, getting it done, doing a great job on Friday and Thursday and over at the Cardinals facility and then with DJ on Saturday. It's well done. This caught my eye over the weekend. So, you know, when I go on my rant about how these stinking club coaches tell you can only play one sport and how you shouldn't do anything other than just that one sport. And I'm like, no, go play lots of sports. Check this out from the NFL. They put this out. And this is good to see for any young player. Do we have the slide? There it is. 28 of 31, guys, 2016 first-round picks played multiple sports in high school. There it is. Very simple, very straightforward. So when you have that pushy club coach, or even that sometimes it's the football coach that doesn't want you to play other sports, which doesn't make any sense to me at all, or it's the basketball coach that doesn't want to work with the football coach, okay, 28 of 31 played multiple sports. So, and it all starts at high school. You should run track. Doesn't matter if you're on the swim team or if you're playing lacrosse or if you're playing on the tennis, whatever it is, just go do stuff. I think that's awesome. 28 of 31. It's great the NFL put that out. You know, we want to see kids do more. I've raised four kids. I've been in the high school system for 20 plus years, and these nitwit club coaches that just grind you. Well, you missed a practice because you're with your school team. You're not going to play. That's why more and more kids are saying, you know what? I am not going to play on the school soccer team. If I'm going to have some club coach who's all wound up about being on some side field late at night with the lights barely on just to practice corner kicks, are you kidding me? So this is good. I really like that. And finally, you know, the Diamondbacks, as I said earlier, try to do a lot for fans. I have no problem with the whole idea of bringing your dog to the park. I can't imagine that bringing your dog to a football game is ever going to be something that happens, or bringing your dog to a basketball game. But here's some pictures from over the weekend, what they did at Chase Field yesterday. Now, Eric, you're a dog guy, and you have rescues. You're really into it. Would you ever consider taking your dogs? You have, what, three of them? Two of them?
Three dogs.
Would you take any of them to the ballpark?
No. You know why? They don't get along with other dogs besides themselves.
Well, that'd be fun.
So they would not be good in a social dog setting.
Whoops. Over in section 128, Eric Sorensen's dog just ate a little thing.
Yeah.
A little fur ball.
When one of our
gone.
Dogs is running around the outfield with an ear in his or her mouth, that would be bad. So
they went for the Guinness record of dogs at the ballpark yesterday. Of course they did. Hey, let's go for a Guinness record. Somebody pull it up here. Google how many dogs at a baseball game at one time. I've got it over here, Derek. 1,000 and whatever. We're on it. We're doing it. Or Cullen or whoever it is that made the decision. And they ended up a little short. They had like 800 and some odd dogs. But I am not going to fault them for trying. I certainly don't put into my... It's kind of like people that say, is the roof going to be open tonight or not? Well, let's call the roof hotline. What a great idea. Let's have something you can call that says, the roof will not be open tonight. Well, if the roof's not open, I'm not going. I've never quite gotten the whole, when people laugh at Arizona from across the country, sometimes we just give them the material and then we whack it out of the park. We have a roof hotline here. Of course we do. We can't fund our schools well enough, but we can certainly get a phone line together to find out if the roof's going to be open or closed. Bringing dogs to the ballpark is fine. It's fun. The first priority should be, are we going to win? I don't know, in Boston or at Yankee Stadium, do they have bring your dog to the park day? At Wrigley Field, do they have it? I don't know this. Educate me. I'm not making fun of the Diamondbacks. I'm simply bringing up, are we trendsetters here in Arizona? Or are we looking for ways to branch out to convince people to come to the ballpark other than to see the team on the field? The hometown nine is the priority. And lastly, I saw where Dave Stewart was on Sirius over the weekend. And he said, Shelby Miller is feeling the pressure of the deal. Yeah, and maybe he's not going to come out of this. Maybe he is like the Matrix and he's down in the rabbit hole. Maybe that's what's going to happen here. We thought the same thing about Zach Greinke and he's gotten better. But if you're not concerned a month into the season, I know a game and a half out, but for Shelby Miller to be 0-3 and not making it through 5 and 6 innings at this point for everything they gave up, it's probably a good thing he's pitching away from home. And he's going to be pitching against Atlanta, his former team, this weekend. And Atlanta can't hit a ball to save their lives. So maybe it sets up well for him. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmack.